This is VOA News. I'm Michael Brown. The Pentagon says its proposed budget will get the United States ready for possible confrontation with China. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
Amid a growing alliance between China and Russia, including President Xi Jinping's visit to Moscow this week, the Pentagon says Chinese actions are concerning.
Moving it down the path towards confrontation and potential conflict with its neighbors, and possibly the United States.
Joint Chiefs Chairman Mark Milley and Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin told a House panel the Pentagon's $842 billion spending pitch would help ensure the U.S. can deter China if needed by boosting capabilities in the Pacific and modernizing the force worldwide.
Preparation for war and deterring war is extraordinarily expensive, but it's not as expensive as fighting a war.
Sagar Magani at the White House.
German unions are calling for thousands of transport workers across the country to go on strike Monday. AP correspondent Karen Chalmers reports.
The one-day transport strike is expected to bring widespread disruption to planes, trains, and local transit. The announced strikes come as employees in many sectors have been seeking hefty raises to reflect persistently high inflation. Germany's annual inflation rate in February was 8.7%. One union, EBG, is calling for 230,000 workers at Germany's main railway operator, Deutsche Bahn, to go on strike. Deutsche Bahn's head of personnel called the EBG strike announcement completely excessive, unnecessary, and disproportionate. I'm Karen Chamas.
North Korea tested a new underwater nuclear attack drone designed to create a radioactive tsunami on enemy coasts, state media claimed Friday. For more news, please join us at our website, voanews.com. This is VOA News. Ukraine, asserting that Russia's attempt to capture Bakhmut has stalled, is now planning to launch a long-awaited counteroffensive very soon. That's according to Ukraine's top ground forces commander, Oleksandr Sursky. He said on the Telegram social media site that Russia's Wagner mercenaries, often convicts recruited out of prisons, are losing considerable strength and are running out of steam in trying to control Bakhmut. After considering a pullout in the eastern city, Ukraine kept its troops in place while also sending in reinforcements. Sursky said, "Very soon we will take advantage of this opportunity, as we did in the past." He said, naming cities Ukraine has defended or captured from Russian control. U.S. President Joe Biden will address the Canadian Parliament on Friday, a day after the United States and Canada reached a deal aimed at stopping asylum seekers from crossing the shared land border via unofficial crossings, though some details still need to be ironed out, according to an official that spoke with Reuters. The revised Safe Third Country Agreement will be discussed on Friday at an official meeting between Biden and Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau in Ottawa, with the announcement likely afterward. Trudeau has been under pressure to stop the flow of asylum seekers in Quebec, the mainly French-speaking province where he holds his parliamentary seat. Human rights activists say Uganda's passage of an anti-homosexuality bill could be an impetus for similar far-reaching legislation across Africa as anti-gay sentiments grow. More than 30 African states already have laws that ban same-sex relationships. Five boys had to be rescued after entering a street tunnel in New York City. To get more from Norman Hall.
Five boys, ages 11 and 12 years old, crawled through a storm drain tunnel on Staten Island. After walking around, they couldn't find their way back to the entrance point. Despite all the concrete and being below street level, their 911 call made it through.
What's the address of Staten Island?
We don't know.
You don't know?
Oh, yeah, we're stuck in the sewers.
You're stuck where?
Dispatchers used a low-tech method for responders to pinpoint their location.
Call for help, guys. They hear you. Call for help.
They were rescued after about an hour in the tunnel. None had significant injuries. I'm Norman Hall.
As always, details on much more news, we invite you to join us at our website. That is voanews.com. Also on the VOA mobile app. I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
Thank you. Today is Friday, March 24th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Afo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, the U.S. Senate votes to continue authorization for the use of military force in a global fight against terror.
Senators voted 86-89 to reject the effort by Kentucky Republican Rand Paul to repeal the 2001 measure. It gave President George W. Bush broad authority for the invasion of Afghanistan.
Ecuadorian authorities probe letter bombs sent to journalists around the country.
At least five journalists received letters containing explosives in Ecuador. No one was seriously injured. Interior Minister Juan Zapata said that the government had a suspect but would not provide a name.
And the WHO warns Cyclone Freddy has increased health risks for millions in Africa. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. The U.S. Senate has voted overwhelmingly to continue congressional authorization for the use of military force in the global fight against terror. Associated Press correspondent Ben Thomas reports.
Senators voted 86-89 to reject the effort by Kentucky Republican Rand Paul to repeal the 2001 measure. It gave President George W. Bush broad authority for the invasion of Afghanistan and the fight against terrorism. It came up in a debate over a separate repeal of two authorizations of military force in Iraq. There is broad bipartisan support to withdraw the congressional approval granted in 1991 and 2002 for military strikes against Saddam Hussein's regime. Those authorizations are rarely used and focus just on Iraq. Ben Thomas, Washington.
Ukraine's president has made his third visit in 2 days to areas that have felt the brunt of Russia's invasion. President Volodymyr Zelensky made a trip on Thursday to the southern Kherson region, which was mostly retaken from Kremlin's forces. It came as a senior Kyiv commander hinted that a brewing Ukrainian counteroffensive could come, quote, very soon, unquote. Zelensky visited Kharkiv on Wednesday. Kharkiv is the country's second largest city in northeastern Ukraine. It was recaptured from the Russians late September as part of the same months-long counteroffensive that won back most of Kherson. Kenyan economists say newly arrived wheat imports from Ukraine could help ease hunger in drought-stricken areas and bring down the high prices of food. 30,000 tons of wheat arrived in Kenya Monday under the UN-brokered Black Sea Grain Initiative, in which Russia agreed not to block Ukrainian grain imports. But Russian President Vladimir Putin warned this week that Moscow could drop the deal within 60 days. Victoria Munga reports from Nairobi, Kenya.
The increased cost of cereal commodities such as wheat has left bakers like Harrison Kiai in the grip of higher wheat flour prices. Kiai says these days his profits are insignificant. He said prices of baking items like flour, sugar, when you compare to the last maybe 2 years, the cost was a bit down. So the challenges that we have right now is to increase the cost, which maybe the customer is not comfortable with, because when you go to the market, the things have shot up. Harrison believes that recent wheat imports from Ukraine will help ease soaring flour prices. 30,000 tons of wheat from Ukraine arrived in Kenya this week. The consignment, which is part of Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky's Grain from Ukraine humanitarian program, was shipped under the UN-brokered Black Sea Grain Initiative. Andriy Prevnenky is the Ukrainian ambassador to Kenya.
Our commitment to food security is in the fact that, okay, the ship is coming, and it's not the first ship coming to Africa, and not even the second one, and we are planning more ships to come. By the end of this year, we are going to deliver 5 million tons of grain exclusively to African countries. But we should realize that as a result of Russian invasion, the crop in Ukraine went down.
Ukrainian agricultural production and exports were severely disrupted by Russia's invasion, and many African countries that rely heavily on Ukrainian grain and wheat have struggled with shortages of key goods and high food prices ever since. The Black Sea Grain Initiative, agreed to last year, is meant to allow Ukrainian food exports to reach foreign markets. However, Russian President Vladimir Putin warned this week that Russia could withdraw from the agreement unless exports of his own agricultural products are facilitated. Prior to the invasion, Kenya imported 2.4 million tons of wheat from Ukraine each year. Although the grain that arrived in Kenya could help ease hunger in drought-hit areas, economists say African governments must develop ways to reduce the reliance on such imports, like increasing local production. Without that, says economist Silas Omenda, countries like Kenya are at the mercy of outside events.
We can do all these other things when it comes to our energy costs, yeah, which is now a catalyst to value addition. It's a nightmare. And also the reliance of fertilizer importation, it has also exposed us to adverse effects of inflation in the global market, meaning that we don't have control over what happens in Ukraine and Russia.
The UN World Food Programme says the disruption in food shipments from Ukraine and Russia has left some 345 million people facing food insecurity. Victoria Amunga for VOA News, Nairobi.
Thank you, Victoria. And U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken has told lawmakers that China's diplomatic and material support for Russia goes against the U.S. interest in ending the Ukraine war. His Capitol Hill testimony comes ahead of a potential call between Chinese President Xi Jinping and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. State Department Bureau Chief Nike Cheng has more.
Russian missiles bombed Ukrainian residential buildings Wednesday on the heels of Chinese President Xi Jinping's state visit to Moscow. Russian President Vladimir Putin says he supports a peace proposal brokered by China. But Ukraine says diplomatic talks can occur only if Russia removes its forces from Ukrainian territory. In Washington, U.S. lawmakers and Secretary of State Antony Blinken say they are skeptical of China's motives.
I think their diplomatic support, their political support, and to some extent material support for Russia certainly goes against our interest in bringing this war to an end.
But Chinese officials insist on Beijing's commitment to promoting Ukraine peace talks.
China has no selfish motives on the Ukrainian issue, has not stood idly by, and has not fanned the flame or taken the opportunity to profit itself. What China has done boils down to one word, that is to promote peace talks.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has expressed interest in talking to Xi, hoping the Chinese leader will more clearly see the Ukrainian perspective. But analysts caution on the sticking points. Secretary of State Blinken renewed his warning to China to not provide Russia with lethal weapons, citing serious economic consequences for Beijing. Nike Chin, VOA News, Washington.
Ecuadorian authorities are investigating a series of letter bombs sent Monday to TV and radio journalists around the country. Journalists say the bombs are part of an intimidation campaign against the free press. For VOA News, Nestor Aguilera has this story from Quito, narrated by Christina Caicedo-Smith.
At least five journalists received letters containing explosives in Ecuador. No one was seriously injured. Interior Minister Juan Zapata said that the government had a suspect but would not provide a name, citing the ongoing investigation.
It was sent by the same person from a serving entrega in the city of Quinsaloma. Three were sent to Guayaquil and two to Quito.
Zapata told reporters that each of the five packages contained a computer USB flash drive loaded with explosives and a trigger. Media associations and journalist guilds strongly condemned the attacks. The bombs were sent to media newsrooms. The threats, which first were made through social media, were directed at television stations such as Ecuavisa, Teleamazonas, and TC Televisión. Journalist Miguel Rivadeneira with Radio Democracia in Quito also received an envelope in his place of work with a flash drive inside.
After the explosion occurred with Lenin Artieda at Ecuavisa, I realized that I had a similar envelope and a similar flash drive. I immediately handed it over to the police on Monday, who examined it and determined that it had an explosive inside the flash drive.
In response to the attacks targeting Ecuadorian media, government officials said that they will activate a protection mechanism to guarantee the safety of the reporters.
We are going to initiate the corresponding protocols, and we are going to generate investigative aspects.
Some journalists say that despite the government's pledge of protection,
It is partly responsible for the increase of violence in the country and against media.
Un momento de violencia.
Sadly, Ecuador is experiencing a moment of violence, much of it political, which added to the action of organized crime that has been linked to what is known as narcopolitics.
The website of the international nonprofit organization Reporters Without Borders says that journalists in Ecuador are working in a climate of growing danger, with the press being under constant attack, largely by government agents. For Néstor Aguilera in Quito, Ecuador, Cristina Caicedo Smith, VOA News.
Ethiopia's prime minister has appointed a spokesperson of the Tigray People's Liberation Front as head of an interim administration in the Tigray region. The appointment is the latest sign of progress in the peace deal that ended a two-year war between the government and the TPLF in November last year. Mayor Mesekel reports from Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
Getachew Reda's appointment was announced in a Twitter message from the Prime Minister's office Thursday. The interim regional administration will be in place until elections are held for the region. The peace deal signed between the two warring parties in November has resulted in the halt of open conflict and a handover of heavy weapons from Tigrayan forces to the federal government. The federal government has resumed essential services to the region and opening of aid corridors. The government dropped its designation of the TPLF as a terrorist organization on Wednesday after lawmakers approved the decision by a majority vote. Getachew Reda, along with other Tigrayan officials, had been charged with terrorism under the designation. Ethiopian media reports say those charges are expected to be lifted, though they have yet to be formally discontinued. A TPLF spokesperson was not immediately available to comment. Rights groups have accused all sides of committing war crimes during the two-year war, including the TPLF, Ethiopia's federal government, and Eritrean and regional Amhara forces who fought on the side of the government. Maya Misakir for VOA News, Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
The World Health Organization warns that Cyclone Freddy, which left a trail of death and destruction across southern Africa, has increased the health risks for millions of people in Malawi, Mozambique, and Madagascar. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Widespread flooding and torrential rains have caused extensive destruction, exposing more than 1.4 million people to outbreaks of waterborne and other diseases in the three countries affected by Cyclone Freddy's devastating punch. The WHO reports this record-breaking storm has destroyed or flooded more than 300 health facilities in Madagascar, Malawi, and Mozambique, leaving communities without adequate access to medical services. WHO reports more than 600 people are known to have been killed and nearly 1,400 injured, with hundreds more missing. Houses, schools, roads, and other infrastructure have been destroyed or damaged. WHO Regional Director for Africa, Machidiso Moeti, says swaths of inundated farmland have raised the fear of malnutrition and the development of diseases and chronic health conditions.
The cyclone's devastation has raised public health risks, including the increased spread of cholera, malaria, vaccine-preventable diseases, even COVID-19 and malnutrition. And of course, support for trauma and mental health is equally needed.
Moeti says the three countries need international support. She notes the WHO has provided almost $8 million, deployed more than 60 experts, and shipped tons of laboratory, treatment, and other critical medical supplies to the affected areas. With WHO marking World TB Day tomorrow, Moeti reports progress in the fight against this ancient killer disease. She says the African region has achieved a 22% decline in new infections since 2015, and TB deaths in the region have dropped by 26% between 2015 and 2021.
Seven countries, Eswatini, Kenya, Mozambique, South Sudan, Togo, Uganda, and Zambia have attained a 35% reduction in deaths since 2015. So we've shown that it is possible to reach and even surpass the first milestone of the NTB strategy, fixed at a 20% reduction by 2020.
However, she says the battle is far from over. WHO reports Africa accounts for a third of TB deaths and a fifth of cases worldwide. Additionally, Moeti says multidrug-resistant TB is a serious problem in the African region, noting just over a quarter of all people living with the disease are receiving the appropriate treatment. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
In other news, track and field has banned transgender athletes from international competition while adopting new regulations that could keep Caster Semenya and other athletes with differences in sexual development from competing. The World Athletics Council adopted the same rules as swimming did last year in deciding to bar athletes who have transitioned from male to female and have gone through male puberty. No such athletes currently compete at the highest elite levels of track world athletics, and President Seb Coe said the updates for athletes with differences in sex development, such as Semenya, will have to undergo hormone-suppressing treatment for 6 months before competing to be eligible for events outside of the previously restricted range of 400 meters to a mile. A study has found most shallow water reef species in Australia have declined over the last decade, likely due in part to global warming. Scientists say marine species in cooler waters of southern Australia are under greater pressure than those on the Great Barrier Reef. Phil Mercer reports.
The Australian study published Thursday found that up to 138 shallow water reef species that have suffered sharp declines in the past 10 years now qualify as endangered or critically endangered. The Reef Life Survey found that larger fish have shown a greater decline than smaller varieties, most likely because of a combination of overfishing and climate change. Pollution and development are also factors. In what the survey's authors say is a clear sign of global warming, population declines are disproportionately affecting marine species in cooler conditions off southern Australia. There's a warning that more than 30% of invertebrates in the region's cool, shallow waters are now considered to be at high risk of extinction. Graham Edgar, a senior research fellow at the University of Tasmania, is the study's lead author. He told the Australian Broadcasting Corporation Thursday that the results are significant.
The declines were much more pronounced along the southern Australian coast than in the tropical waters. So regardless of all the attention paid to the Great Barrier Reef, which is deserved in terms of the impacts that are occurring there with heat waves, we found that species along the southern Australian coast showed even greater declines in general.
Researchers say that more marine animals and plants in Australia are migrating south to avoid warmer sea temperatures. They caution, however, that species in cooler waters are facing so-called climate traps or geophysical barriers stopping them from moving, such as water temperature or salinity. Edgar warns that warmer ocean temperatures were starting to push species to their limits. The Reef Life Survey analysed more than 1,000 species at around 1,600 locations. The fieldwork was undertaken by about 100 recreational divers trained to collect scientific data. The results are published in the journal Nature. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
This is Science in a Minute.
When looking for extrasolar planets that might have life, scientists often look for those that reside in habitable zones or areas of a solar system where conditions could be just right for life as we know it to survive. Scientists at the University of California at Irvine provide evidence in a new study that might open up the search for extraterrestrial life beyond habitable zone planets. Unlike the planets in our solar system, many exoplanets are tidally locked to their host star. In other words, they have a permanent day and night side. One side could have scorching hot temperatures, while the other side would always be extremely cold. The UC Irvine scientists propose that areas on these planets, which they call terminator zones, that are at the dividing line between its day and night sides, could also provide conditions to harbor life. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Social media or all of the above?
Stay engaged with VOA Africa. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp. Leave a message, comments, or greetings. We may play your message on VOA Africa. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Encounter, a roundup of issues dominating the U.S. political landscape, from a possible indictment against former President Donald Trump to the contours of the Republican primary as potential candidates vie for an opportunity to challenge Democratic President Joe Biden in 2024. Veteran political analysts weigh in on these and other domestic stories next on the U.S. Politics edition of Encounter this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Around the clock, The Voice of America keeps you in touch with the latest news.
Tune in at the top of every hour, every day of the week.
For the 5-Minute VOA Newscast.
We bring you reports from our correspondents and interviews with newsmakers from around the globe.
Give us 5 minutes and we'll give you the world.
VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours at voanews.com. And check out voafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition and our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I am Chinua Nwafu in Washington. Have a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
During his recent visit to Israel, U.S. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin emphasized that America's commitment to Israel's security is ironclad.
And our bond is rooted in far more than just shared interests. It's rooted in the shared values of democracy and freedom and the rule of law. And those values remain essential.
U.S. assistance to Israel is robust, $3.3 billion annually for security assistance, as well as additional funding for cooperation on missile defense. This past January, the two countries participated in a joint military exercise that Secretary Austin called a key step forward in interoperability, helping us both to better address regional threats. In his discussions with Israeli Defense Minister Yoav Gallant, Secretary Austin told reporters Iran was a major topic.
Iran remains the primary driver of instability in the region, and we remain deeply concerned by Iran's support for terrorism, its dangerous proxies, its nuclear advances, its aggression at sea, its cyber threats, and its proliferation of attack drones and advanced conventional weapons.
Secretary Austin underscored President Biden's pledge that Iran will never be permitted to acquire a nuclear weapon. He noted the United States continues to believe that diplomacy remains the best way to prevent Iran from doing so. Secretary Austin's visit to Israel occurred at a time of elevated tensions between Israel and the Palestinians. The two defense ministers, Secretary Austin said, had a very frank and candid discussion among friends about the need to de-escalate, lower tensions, and to restore calm.
As we always have, we're calling on the Palestinian leadership to combat terrorism and to resume security cooperation and to condemn incitement. And as I always have, I was very clear about Israel's right to defend itself.
We are urging everyone to de-escalate in terms of activities in the West Bank. Our focus remains on working with Israel and the Palestinians and other regional partners to de-escalate and restore calm, Secretary Austin said. And I look forward to continuing to work together to make Israel even more secure over the long haul.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.